The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.
Welcome to Local Flavor Live, a podcast about the food and drink scene in Baltimore. I'm your host, Lauren Cohen, and I'm back today with our food and dining editor, Jane Marion, back from Maine. How was your vacation?
ULC. Hi. It was awesome, and I'll tell you more about it later on the pod.
How's your week? I know you had a crazy week.
I haven't had the best week. Had a great vacation, except for the fact that Southwest canceled our flight, so it was like a 12-hour drive home.
Oh, man.
I know 95 now really well between Maine and Baltimore. Ask me any question about a New England town, I can tell you about it. We stopped for some pizza, not at the famous place Pepe's in New Haven, which I've been to, but a little place in Hartford, Connecticut. It was okay. I actually had a Philly cheesesteak pizza, which I can't believe we did. Yeah,
It's your Philly roots.
Yeah, it was decent. You know, yeah. Normally, I would never eat anything outside of Philly that claimed to be Philly, but it wasn't bad. And, you know, it was a long drive, so it was a welcome relief.
Yes, you guys must have been starving.
Yeah, but my doggie died, Stella.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
She was 13, and, you know, what was super sweet was on our way out to take her to the vet, my husband grabbed some rotisserie chicken for her, which really was her favorite table food. And she ate it until the very end. Yeah. So, you know, thank you, Quarry Lake, for making such good rotisserie chicken.
Is that where you get it?
Making my baby happy until her last breath.
Oh, yeah, that's where we get it. I mean, I remember you did a story about pets, and it was a future story not too long ago about, and your intro was just so, you eloquently spoke about how pets are such parts of our families.
Yeah,
and
the line was, they leave a permanent paw print on our heart.
That's the one I was thinking of.
I've edited a few pet issues, actually. Yeah. One of my favorite things that we did at the magazine, actually, about pets was we had a fashion shoot. Probably it's been maybe 10 years ago. I think all the dogs featured are now gone. But it was called, are you ready, Pet Porte.
Oh my gosh,
I
love that.
Editor in chief Max Weiss came up with that. It was so clever.
That's so cute.
And we did a fashion show. Don't love animals in outfits, but for the sake of the issue, it was really fun. Aww. And all the editors with dogs got to bring their doggies in. We staggered the time so that there were no dog fights in our studio.
That's perfect.
And I was the only one that got two dogs featured. My two Shih Tzus, Stella, who just died, and Luna, who died 3 years ago, featured in cruise wear.
Ooh. Wait, so how did you...
Nautical bathing suit.
Oh, how did you, like, style every... Did the style editor at the time?
So Janelle Ehrlichman Diamond, who's now our bride editor.
Yes.
And home. She was style editor, and she literally, you know, had a rack of outfits. She got the dog sizes ahead of time. I did notice, I'm not going to say, some people use their influence and status at the magazine. Like Max's dog, I can't remember the dog's name at the time, but it was in like a cashmere Italian coat.
That
was very
gosh.
Dignified, whereas my dogs were in these dumb little swimsuits.
Aww.
But we had really cool collars, and we had an animal trainer there. It was really fun.
It's just
did a video too. It's still on the website.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I'm gonna check it out myself.
Yes,
I will definitely do that when we put this podcast up on our website.
Pretty fun. How was your week?
It was good. I love hearing about Stella. It's just such fun memories of her and. Yeah, it's just such sad news.
I don't think she's been to the office. I don't think she has.
Oh, because that was taken in the studio.
Yeah.
I just feel so awful. But, you know, she sounds like she was such a great part of your family when she was here. My fourth was great. I hung out a lot with my family. We had cookouts and just did kind of the all-American fourth thing.
Yeah. Did you see fireworks?
Yes. Well, they were kind of all over. Like, I was in the county, and then I came back to the city, and I could see them driving down 83. I was back in Hamden, and I saw them blasting all over. So it was beautiful. It was actually really muggy out in Baltimore the last 4th of July. So, you know, I know it's never, I feel like sometimes it rains and the weather never cooperates, but, you know, it was beautiful. It was a nice Baltimore 4th of July sure. Yeah.
Do they have them at Fort McHenry? That'd be a great place to see it.
Yeah, there's a lot of. We actually have a roundup for next summer if anybody cares to check it out on our website of places to look. I know Fort McHenry, Inner Harbor, a lot of people sit on top of Druid Hill Park, like the big hill.
That's a great spot.
Yeah, you know, obviously Federal Hill is a good one. So lots of places to see. And it was great.
So what I miss in the food world? What's going on here? Tell us,
Oh, God, you give me too much credit. Lots of things going on this week. We saw the opening of this place called Fishnet, which has been around in College Park since 2011. It came to Mount Vernon Marketplace recently, so it's a stall that's open there. So it's the founder of this concept is his chef. His name is Ferhat Yelsin. I really hope I'm saying his name correctly because he sounds so smart and talented. And he was brought up in Istanbul. So his fish-centric concept is something that is very much inspired by his upbringing. And he has these famous fish sandwiches. I know Washingtonian actually wrote a pretty in-depth piece about the impact of these fish sandwiches.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a pretty big deal. He had a restaurant
called... Making a splash.
Yes, exactly. I love that.
Drum roll.
Yeah, I loved it. He had a restaurant called Drift on 7th in D.C., which has since closed. But, you know, he really... he made his mark there for sure, and especially in the College Park area as well. But these fish sandwiches, so it comes from this tradition of... fishermen in Turkey who, you know, right when they catch the fish from the sea, they put it right on a bun and they put some lettuce and tomatoes on it. And that's like this like Turkish street food. It's called balak ekmek. I'm really not saying that correctly, but it sounds delicious. And he has his own versions of these sandwiches at the new stall in Mount Vernon Marketplace, which is now open. It recently had a grand opening celebration. So you guys can look out for things like a Faroe Island grilled salmon sandwich, a local catfish sandwich. They also have salmon croquettes and Baja fish wraps. So it kind of looks like a Baja taco. But it seems like it's a really great nod to his upbringing and, you know, his culture.
He sounds like a great story. You know, I have very low standards for fish sandwiches. I love them.
Yeah.
And I will admit that in my youth, I would always get the filet of fish at McDonald's.
Yes.
And we weren't really allowed to eat fast food. My mother was very forward-thinking for somebody who, you know, was raising a family in the 50s and 60s. But occasionally we could go to McDonald's and get that filet of fish, which I honestly think is probably the worst thing for you on the menu. I don't know how you get a square of fish.
I don't think I've ever had one. To be completely honest with you,
really?
I don't think I've ever had one. I always used to get chicken nuggets, which are probably, I would argue, worse for you.
Maybe.
Because they're not, there's no way they're actually chicken
nuggets.
But
you know, the fish is square, the filet of fish.
Right.
It's a square patty that's kind of odd looking with a ton of tartar sauce and bun. I can still taste it. It was delicious.
When was the last time you had one?
Oh gosh, I have no idea.
Yeah, like eons ago.
30 years. But, you know, years ago I interviewed Ruth Reichel, who's extremely famous, former New York Times food critic. And I think I asked her, like, what was your favorite meal you've ever eaten anywhere in the world? And she mentioned this place, I think it was in Italy, you know, on the coast somewhere, like the Amalfi Coast. And she said she sat down, it was a little restaurant on a beach, and there wasn't really a menu, and they were brought this fresh olive oil and a loaf of bread. And I don't know, they were just, it was sort of like, you just get what you get when you sit down.
Yeah.
And the woman, you know, brought them their bread and said, I'll be back with your lunch, you know, in a half, I don't think she said a time. She just went away.
Yeah.
And the next thing they knew, she was down the beach with a fishing rod.
What? Wait.
Catching their meal.
That's so funny. That is definitely the definition of local sourcing
But this is what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm eager to try it.
Me too. And I think, you know, after establishing a presence in College Park for so long, it's going to be great for them to kind of hit the Baltimore market as well. So I'm looking forward to getting over to Mount Vernon Marketplace as well. And then we also heard about about this new place. It's called Walker's Tap and Table. It's slated to open in the fall. And this is a restaurant that Chef Chad Wells is affiliated with. He was big in the Baltimore food scene a while ago. He was the chef that headed up Alewife for 6 years. So he has since then gone to his native Howard County to work with the Victoria Restaurant Group. So that's Manor Hill Tavern, Victoria Gastro mm-hmm. Pub, Manor Hill Brewing. And so he is getting ready for this new venture. This is going to be a restaurant that's in western Howard County. It's going to have a farm-to-table menu.
Okay, don't say that word.
I know. It's like it's your cringe word.
It's become my cringe word.
I know. No. But I think seasonal is the focus for sure. And then they also have their own brick pizza oven. So they're
like
going to be doing
something for everyone.
Yeah, they're going to be doing wood-fired pizzas there. And I think it's just a good indication of how the Howard County dining scene has grown. I know recently we were talking about the Brewer's Art Tavern, mm-hmm. and you've reviewed the Turn House, which is another one.
Yeah, in a really unexpected location on a golf course.
Yes.
Like you go through a neighborhood, and then eventually you get to this country club and a golf course, but it's a restaurant open to the public.
Right. And the chef there, Thomas Zappelli? Something with a Z.
You know what?
He's so talented.
Yes.
A younger chef, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, very talented.
But I think, yeah, it just goes to show that there are a lot of different options in Howard County that weren't there, you know, maybe even a year ago. I've seen such a growth there.
Howard County, you know, it's a little bit of a strain. It reminds me of Orlando, where I used to live. Lots of strip malls. It can be hard to find restaurants and strip malls, and I have a little bit of a negative expectation when I go to a strip mall, but that's really unfair.
Yeah.
But, you know, Howard County is a lot of D.C. commuters, people that also come to Baltimore, both of which have really vibrant food scenes. Mm-hmm. So I think culinarily speaking, it's a little bit of a stepchild, that area, a little bit of a no man's land, but it feels like that. Is, you know, it's really growing. There's some really great sushi there.
Yes.
Sushi King.
Yes.
Sushi Sono. Both those places are great.
Sushi Sono. Yes. That's mm-hmm. the one I was thinking of. And it's awesome because I feel like a lot of the people opening these restaurants are Howard County natives, specifically Ryan Roth, I think is his name, mm-hmm. who opened the Brewer's Art Tavern, and Chad Wells, who, you know, he gained some attention from the Food Network and Travel Channel when he was with Alewife. And he is a Howard County native himself. So it's really, you know, these chefs and restaurant owners who are advocating for their neighborhoods. And it's awesome to see.
It's its own, you know, peculiar market in its own way. You know, Tony Foreman and Cindy Wolf opened a restaurant there that just, what was it called? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, Lupa.
Lupa, mm-hmm. thank you.
Yeah.
And it was actually really delicious. It was sort of a I don't want to say poor man's, but a more economical Cingale, which mm-hmm. we have here in Harbor East, high-end, you know, fine dining and Italian food. And it just couldn't make it.
Right.
Tony Foreman told me that, you know, people thought of it as just like a fine dining experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it was Petit Louis before that, they associated French food with, you know, fancy. And, you know, it's families. It's a lot of families.
Sure.
And, so I hope that these places succeed.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely a dearth.
Yeah. and then we also had we heard some really amazing, heartwarming news from the team at Ekiben earlier this week. They actually went, so Steve Chu and Ephraim Abibi, they're the owners, they took their team and they set up shop in front of Old Town Mall, which is the abandoned pedestrian shopping center space that's in East Baltimore. And they literally just gave out free sandwiches. And I thought that this was something that was so deserving of a shout out in our open and shut column this week. Obviously, you know, publicity was something that they were not at all thinking about with this.
Yeah.
They truly just did it because of the fact that they care so much about our community. And, you know, it's something we heard about. One of our designers in the art team, Danielle Dernoga, she freelances and designed some of their flyers for them. So she was telling us that she made the flyer. They literally, old school, just handed out flyers to people. And I think it says so much about their philosophy and about giving back and what our food scene can do as far as sustainability and food deserts. And It was just such a beautiful thing to see, and I felt like they were so worthy of this shout out, even though it was something that they probably never even wanted right. or thought about.
Yeah, I think this new generation of chefs, you know, they're really inspired. They're a lot of them are millennials. They want to give back.
Yeah,
there's sort of a greater meaning and purpose in their work, and I think the two of them are. It's three guys at Ekman.
There used to be three, and now it's two. Yeah, but they're so wonderful.
Yeah, they're good people, mm-hmm. and I think that also shows in their food. There's a lot of love.
Yes,
you know, I'm doing a food issue next year, and mm-hmm. I think I'm going to feature some sort of movers and shakers, and I think these two guys are really important. I mean, it's literally a hole in the wall, and they've been. Covered by, you know, places like Condé Nast Traveler.
Yes.
And gotten a lot of national attention. Their food is delicious. It's inexpensive. And they're likable do-gooders. And they have the best bathrooms. They do. The best bathrooms.
What I was expecting you to say. But you're right. You're absolutely right.
They have, like, manga comic, you know, pages ripped from their favorite books.
Yeah.
As I think maybe their childhood friends or college friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a fun place. It has a great vibe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's doing so much to kind of just keep propelling the food scene forward. And, you know, they're just such great guys with great hearts. So I thought that was definitely worthy of a shout out. But I'm on the edge of my seat to hear about Maine. I want to hear all about your adventures and what you ate.
Get back in your seat.
A lot of trees.
A lot of hiking.
A lot of lobsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Maine, have you ever been?
No, I need to go. I know. So it was funny. You and Jess were like ships in the night after her last day. She went up to Maine to visit a former coworker of ours and some family she has there. But everyone's going. I need to go.
Yeah, so I've been many times. My daughter just graduated from college there. But I wanted one last hurrah to Acadia. So we took a family trip without my daughter, who's on the West Coast for the summer.
Right.
And rented a house. And my goal when I'm in Maine, whenever I go, is a lobster in some form a day. It doesn't have to be a steam lobster.
I like
it's
that.
It's often a lobster roll. I just find them, they're a lot less work and equally delicious. But so lobster, blueberry pie, lots of local the Maine blueberries are tiny, so I had a lot of blueberry jam, pancakes, blueberry donuts. But, you know, lobster is to Maine what crab is to Baltimore or mm-hmm. to Maryland. Unlike crab, though, you know, when you eat a lobster in Maine, it came from Maine. There's no shortage of lobsters. And when you go to these little lobster shacks, I mean, they open up the, you know, the refrigerator where they keep the lobsters or the tanks. There are hundreds of lobsters. It's unreal.
Wow.
You know, there are plenty of 3-pound lobsters. I like mine a little smaller. I like them between a pound and a half to 2 pounds. So let's see, we stayed near a place called Trenton Bridge, which was a shack that's been around 70 years, family owned. If I lived in Maine, I would have done a story on them.
Mm-hmm.
The guy in all the boat pictures was the guy that steamed my lobster. They actually had these wooden, almost like, they look like cauldrons outside where they steam them. They put the lobsters in a net. If you get clams or mussels or even corn, your entire order goes in that net.
Wow.
And gets lowered into the cauldron, which is you know, fired by wood.
Mm-hmm.
So the lobster there, I hadn't had just a plain lobster in a long time from Maine. I had it on always get linguine and lobster rolls and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, the lobster itself, it was just the sweetest lobster I've ever had. It pulled so easily out of the shell. It was effortless.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, whether it was just the steaming technique was so perfect. They didn't crack it for us. But, you know, just one crack and the entire claw meat came out. Butter is sold separately, which I thought was kind of funny.
It was a dollar
for butter.
Wow.
And the butter is poured out of a pitcher. Just drawn butter. I mean, it comes by
I'm
the pitcher.
I'm imagining the wait staff, like they pour water out of a pitcher, just coming around. You need more butter? Here you go.
So funny. I thought that was funny, but I think the reason probably is that they discourage you from using butter.
Yeah.
You know, maybe butter is for tourists.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because I feel like when people come and they ask for butter with their crab sometimes, it's like a little like taboo. So, but I don't know. I always think of butter as more of a lobster thing than a crab thing. So yeah, I don't know what the rules are.
Yeah. So, and then we went to a shack where it was just fun to see how they serve them. They cook them kind of the same way in the net, outside in the fire, but they serve the lobster in a very unceremonial tin, like just this plain kind of a tin, and the lobster is just put on the tin with sometimes a corn, a cob. And that's kind of the meal. And it's, you know, lobsters back in the day were served to prisoners. They were so plentiful.
Wow.
They're, you know, kind of, if you really think about it, they look like giant, you know, cockroaches or something. they were a food that nobody really wanted to eat. So prisoners ate lobsters.
But, that is so interesting. Yeah. I never knew that.
So, yeah, I mean, it was just divine. I forget what my tally was, but I think it was something like 2 whole steamed lobsters, 3 lobster rolls, and are you ready? I didn't eat this, but we went out for ice cream, and they actually have lobster ice cream.
What does it taste like? Like, if you could describe it, I know it's hard.
It was in, they said it was sort of like butter pecan without the nuts. So a creamy, sweet vanilla flavor with bits of lobster instead of nuts.
Wow. It sounds like something the Charmery would, you know.
And you know how David we do Alima that with crab. You know, yeah, we do some weird stuff with crab. Putting it on a pretzel. So I was kind of on the prowl for sort of the most inventive use of lobster.
That must have been it.
Yeah. I had a lobster taco, which I felt it was a low point. I was hungry. We hiked about 10 miles, and then we went out for margaritas and got something to eat, and you know, I was just gonna stick with my lobster rule where I hadn't had lobster that day. I had to have a lobster, and so I had lobster tacos, and they were okay.
They were okay. They weren't like the high point, and I like how you described them. So, it sounds so amazing. I'm over here salivating. Yeah. But I need to get there, and I think that the food traditions, as they, you know, like you were saying, lobster is to Maine as crab is to Baltimore. It's so interesting, the stories behind these delicacies and, you know, the things that you learn about them, like the prisoners who, had it as their main meal.
Well, I am proud, you know, several years ago, I headed up a seafood issue.
That's right.
We, you know, decided that Maryland was more than just crab. We looked at rockfish and we looked at oysters, and the editor of Yankee Magazine in New England, Mel Allen, told me he was inspired by our story and decided to do a cover story on lobster rolls. And they sent their food writer in an RV. They let her rent an RV. And she went roving all over, I guess really just Maine, eating in these lobster shacks and coming up with a list of like the top 25 lobster rolls. And I was like, oh God, I would love to do that.
Yes, let's get in an RV and just head around Maryland.
And, you know, you wouldn't think that there's that much difference, but there is. Like, there's a place that's famous in Maine that serves their lobster on a round bun, like a hamburger bun instead of a hot dog.
Wow, that's interesting. What's your take on that? Like, would you be deterred by it?
I wouldn't call it a lobster roll.
Right, because it's not a roll.
Right, if I had to do that list. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so interesting. You know, I actually tried one earlier this week. I went to a media event. So we've talked about Rachel Lipton on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. She organized a media event at this place. We were talking about Howard County. It's called Walrus Oyster and Ale House. It's like right near the mall.
I like the name.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Has, you know, the beautiful like garage roll up door. So we're in this room that overlooked just the pedestrian walkway near the mall. And they have local oysters, which I really appreciated. And their lobster roll actually got a lot of praise from The Sun recently. I tried it. I mean, to me, it was a lobster roll. I think I don't have much to compare it to, but you know, we've got some good contenders in Baltimore, wouldn't you say?
Tame Street's awesome. Lock Bar has a great one.
Lock Bar.
But you know, when you eat that lobster, these lobsters were caught that day.
Yes.
And that's why they come easily out of the shell.
Right.
It's hard to explain what freshness tastes like. It's just a more intense lobstery flavor, I guess I might, you know, is what I would say.
Yeah.
You know, so I just, I actually like crab more than lobster. Lobster can be really rich. It can, I don't know, I can actually get sick of lobster. Like, I probably won't be eating lobster for the rest of the summer.
Right, right.
And I make lobster rolls at home, I've learned. But, yeah, the bun has to be buttered on the side. You know, it has to be like a New England roll where the side is kind of shaved.
Yes.
And grilled on either side with butter. Some versions in Maine, they mix in mayo. And others, they do the brown butter, which is my preference. I'm not a huge mayo person.
Right.
It really shouldn't be celery or anything like that. I mean, sometimes you'll see it. It's usually served often with just a bag of chips. It's a very informal food.
Yeah.
Even though we consider lobster fancy. And, yeah, but...
It's so interesting. Like, I'm just listening to you say, like, I like crab merlot. I'm wondering, like, would I rather... never eat crab cakes for the rest of my life or never eat a lobster roll? It's a hard decision, but I think being from Baltimore.
Yeah. I've had lobster and crab cakes together. I think I don't remember where I ate that, but that was a delicious thing.
That sounds
thing,
so
actually.
Indulgent.
Yeah,
I love it.
Very. Double
seafood. Oh, well, it sounds like you had such a great time. It's definitely a good escape and a good getaway.
And then they have something called whoopie pies. Have you heard of
them? Oh, I've heard of them. I don't think I've ever had them. It's like the cream in the middle.
I don't like them.
Okay.
I mean, a classic whoopie pie is basically like a devil's food cake that's, you know, it's like an ice cream sandwich, if you can picture that, that's round. That's how. And then the middle is... icing, basically.
Okay.
So it's like an inside out.
So is it more of like a lighter cream, or is it like the icing that you get to bake like a Betty Crocker cake?
It's a really sugary. Yeah. It's not buttercream.
Okay. Okay.
The kind that needs refrigeration. Mm-hmm. It's like you would find on a birthday cake.
Right. Okay.
On like a supermarket birthday cake.
Yes. Yes.
They come in fun flavors. Uh-huh. You know, chocolate chip, blueberry.
Blueberry.
But, yeah. Like we're, you know, they're all about blueberries. Like
yes.
We're all about. Know what's the equivalent, Old Bay or something. Yeah. Everything's blueberry beer, which my daughter drank through college. I do not care for them. I mean, when I took my first bite, everyone was laughing because I just made, you know, it's just like ultra sweet.
Right.
Yeah, they look really pretty, but I find them inedible, honestly.
That's one thing.
Sorry,
we'll let Maine have that one. We'll let you have your
that
whoopie pies.
And their Moxie soda, which is like,
what is that?
It's sort of like their version of Coke. Moxie.
Moxie.
Is so sweet.
Oh, it's like there's
sweeter.
A lot of sugar in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's sweeter than Coke, but it's, you know, it's a brown cola.
Yeah. Moxie. I
like
never heard
the
of
name.
It. Yeah. You can have your Moxie and your whoopie pies.
Exactly.
We'll keep the crap.
Take that, me.
Yeah. But no, it's so great to hear about your trip. And I wanted to just briefly talk about, we had a roundup that I was lucky to edit. It went live this week about drag performances. And it was something, obviously, we, in our Faces of Pride issue from June, addressed that drag has become so much more mainstream in recent times. And, you know, when it comes to food and drink, there's some really awesome options for drag brunches and drag dinners. So I encourage all of our listeners to check out that roundup.
Have you ever gone to a drag brunch?
Yes. So I've been to the Point South drag brunch at least once.
People love,
It's amazing. It really, and from a service perspective, like, basically, you get there early, you're seated at your table, they bring the mimosas quickly, and then it's buffet style. So you go and you grab your plate, and then, you know, there's an ample amount of time for everybody to settle in before the show starts. Mm-hmm. Because the way that that place is set up, it's like they have the main dining room upstairs, and then the drag performances are in the kind of basement level. So kind of like once the show starts, you're a little restrained to your seat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I like how it's set up, and then... you know, so that's a great one. And then I've also done Hotel Revival does something similar where they do dinner shows. It's called Drag Revival, which is included in the roundup. And they also use their lower level restaurant Square Meal, which is, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the breakfast place.
Yes, exactly. So they shut that down at night, and then that's where they do their performances, and people can kind of look over the railings from the lobby.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I just, you know, I really think that it's a wonderful combination of a food and dining experience and a show.
It's like dinner theater.
It is.
How mainstream it's become.
Yes, me too.
I haven't been to one, but I did go to the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You did?
Yeah, about like 10 times in college.
Really?
When it first came out.
Yeah, I think that you're due for one, it seems like. We'll go to one together.
That would be fun.
Yes, it's so much fun. And
although I don't love brunch, maybe that's a problem. That's
we'll go to a dinner. We'll go to a dinner.
Do they have drag dinners?
Yeah, so the drag dinner, the one at Revival is a drag dinner.
Oh, that's
and
a
the
dinner,
food
right.
was great. I'm trying to remember exactly because it's been, it was a couple of months ago that I went, but it was a nice spread. There was like a big green salad, and which doesn't sound super exciting. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was.
Salad. Yeah. You had me in salad.
You had me in salad. And I think there was a chicken dish and some pasta, just like kind of like elevated buffet fare.
Yeah,
so it was awesome. We'll definitely go to one. If anybody wants to check out more information about drag performances, feel free to check out our website.
So and what was your best bite?
Bites.
The big green salad.
The big green salad. No, something a little more tasty, I think. I actually went to Sunny Lee's, which is, yes, it's a staple Chinese food restaurant in Reisterstown, kind of where it's very close to where I grew up and where my parents live. And it's just such an experience. The owner, Sunny, it's his namesake restaurant, and he is the cutest man who comes around and he visits all of the tables and he... People who ordered the Peking duck, he carves it tableside.
Oh, he does it himself.
Yes, yes. He comes out and he does it himself. He's just, you know, one of those really loyal business owners. People tell him all the time, they're like, Sonny, you need to take a vacation. Do you ever take any days off? And he doesn't. He's just, you know,
It's been there decades.
It's been there decades. I think at least since the 80s. And he just has really continued to stand the test of time. I think people just rely on the food. It's, you know, definitely, I think, Americanized in some ways, but also there's a lot of ways. He was born in Shanghai and grew up in Hong Kong. So he has brought a lot of his recipes. He really prides himself on the sauces. And he, you know, is just someone who I think is just awesome and such a great restaurant owner. So
to me, there's no bad Chinese food.
Yeah.
Or pizza. Yeah. There are a couple categories where no matter what it is, it's great.
It's great.
I love Chinese food. Nobody in my family likes it, but I grew up eating it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. It's awesome. And when I went with my parents over the weekend, it was, you know, kind of like a rainy Saturday night, and we were like, let's go to Sunny Lee. So we had this crispy, sweet and sour beef that was so good. It came in a very bright red sauce with some peas, and I think there were some shredded carrots that were cooked. And you would think by looking at the sauce that it would be more spicy than sweet, but it really was. It was more on the sweeter side, and the beef was so perfectly crispy. It was well cooked. It wasn't chewy.
Mm-hmm.
We got some pork fried rice, and we got it was
Did
just
you get wonton soup.
We didn't get soup just because I'm like weird when it's hot outside. I can't eat soup. I'm so strange.
Soup,
I know. It is. It's such a classic. But yeah, it was a wonderful meal. I would really recommend it if anybody's on the prowl for some good Chinese food.
Every time someone says Chinese food, every Sunday night we take my grandmother to the Lotus Inn in Philadelphia's Chinatown.
I feel like you've told me this. Yeah.
And she kept kosher, but when we ate Chinese food, she somehow acted like she never knew there was pork in the wontons. And we got char siu ding, which is the main protein is pork. It's like diced pork, and she ate it, you know, and then she would every time set the, you
I
know,
love
the
this
table,
story.
The table next to us, you know, her neck would crane as the you know, those old fashioned dishes with the lids. Is that what Sunny Lee's has? Those stainless steel dishes with the lids?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
So my grandmother would like always be looking at what other people got as the dish, you know, the lid was raised off the dish.
Wow.
I have such a strong association with that.
That's such a funny story.
She just loved Chinese food. We shared that together.
Yeah, it's very nostalgic. So is your best bite your lobster rolls or the lobster
I mean,
and Maine?
Yeah,
nothing
best,
can top
I would
it.
Say my best bite was not whoopie pies.
Not the whoopie pies.
And was all the lobster rolls and really the steamed lobsters, because as I said, I usually don't have I have something more adulterated, but just getting the plain old lobster with the butter and the corn, I would say, you know, was a perfect meal that I had at a place called Trenton Bridge and then another at Thurston Pond, which is kind of an institution in the Acadia National Park area. People line up for hours. We actually got lucky and probably waited about a half an hour.
I love those names.
Yeah,
wow.
You kind of get in a line, place your order, and then sit down and they bring you your lobsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, now all of our listeners know everything they need to for planning a trip to Maine, as well as I now have all of the knowledge I need. And I think this was so great to hear about your trip. And thank you so much, Jane. We missed you last week, but I'm glad you're back and I'm glad you had a great time. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. You can pick up a copy of our July issue. It's our Crabs A to Z guide, which is still on newsstands. And you can check out our food coverage every day at BaltimoreMagazine.com.
The Local Flavor Live podcast is powered by AudioStack, which provides all the tools you need to host, distribute, and monetize your podcast.